We are in a sermon series just talking about the life of Abraham. And, you know, Corbett was telling me the last couple of weeks, he was like, you keep switching back and forth between the name Abram and Abraham. And for those of you who don't know kind of the scope of the story, he starts out as Abram, and then God changes his name to Abraham a little bit later on. And so if I kind of mix that up and go back and forth, I apologize. It's just because that Abraham name is stuck in my head. But as best as we can, right now in this story, he's Abram. And so this morning, I want to read this. We're just going to continue down the narrative. And for those of you who don't know or haven't been with us the last few weeks, Abram, God calls him to an incredible to make an incredible decision of faith and trust in him, basically to leave everything he knows and to pursue something that's totally unknown. And Abram expresses incredible faith in God and says yes to this adventure, this journey that God wants to take him on. And along the way, his faith is tested. Along the way, his faith grows. And as we come to this story, we begin to kind of get the sense that there's some, that Abram's learned some things. He makes some incredibly wise decisions in this particular story, as opposed to the story that we looked at last week, when he made some very terrible decisions. And you can read that and scratch your head after this if you didn't get a chance to be with us. But Genesis chapter 13, verse 1 is where we're going to pick it up. So we know Abram went down to Egypt. He had a whole thing with the Pharaoh there, tried to take his wife, and it's an interesting story. But we covered that last week. So verse 1, so Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev, and with his wife, thankfully, and everything that he had, and Lot went with him. Lot, for those of you who don't know, is kind of like it's his nephew, but it's his adopted son in many ways, because Lot's father had died. Abram had become very wealthy in livestock and silver and gold, which is a blessing. But as we know, and as the saying goes, more money, more problems. And that's exactly what happens here. And in verse 3, from the Negev, he went to place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier, and where he had first built an altar. There Abram called on the name of the Lord. Okay, so this theme is coming back again and again. We looked at this the second week, the importance of he erects these altars, these places of remembrance, this recognition of God's presence in his life, and it's a theme that recurs again and again for him. And it says, now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, again his nephew, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram's herders and Lot's. The Canaanites and Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. And so Abram said to Lot, let's not have quarreling between you and me, or between your herders and mine, for we are close relatives. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. So there's a very literal fork in the road, and they come to this decision. So verse 10, Lot looked around and saw, as you would do, the whole plain of the Jordan toward Zoar was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. Now, this was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of Jordan and set out toward the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plains and pitched his tents near Sodom. Now the people of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. We'll get into that maybe in the next couple of weeks, but it's definitely kind of an ominous dun-dun-dun, you know, the plot thickens. So this is where Lot chose to live. Now, a couple of things just to kind of set the tone for this particular message. You know, as we go through this story, there's a recurring line that says, and Lot went with him, and Lot went with him, and Lot went with him. And so there's something about Lot. He certainly is not a positive character in this narrative, in Abram's story, but I will give Lot credit for this. He knew that living in relationship with Abram was lucrative, right? There was a blessing that was following him everywhere he went, and as long as he was with Abram, he was receiving that blessing. And so he's smart enough to recognize he's reaping the rewards of a lucrative relationship. And he may not be the most positive character in the story, but he is smart, and he is shrewd, and there's a blessing that follows him. But what I love about this, and I'm calling this message this morning, Faith and Friction. See what I did there? Faith and friction. All sorts of play on words going on there. Faith and friction, because so much of Abram's story is about faith. And as we looked at last week, his faith was tested. As we looked at in the first week, his faith was launched. And here we find there's friction in his relationships. And it's because of Abram's faith that he's able to navigate this. And I want to show you this. But first, we come to this inevitability, and that is that friction is inevitable. It is going to happen. We are going to face friction in our lives. And Abram chose to embrace this and to face the conflict in this situation, recognizing this was necessary and he had to go through it. He could not go around it. And I think that's a really important principle that we see here right at the beginning. And so, you know, this first point is just simply, he's embracing the friction. And we've got to learn to embrace the friction in the midst of our relationships. Now, conflict in relationships is never easy. It would be masochistic for us to say that, oh, I love conflict, right? It's what gets me up in the morning, right? I mean, maybe there are a few people like that, but they're certainly not healthy people. But it is often conflict and friction, right, that is a catalyst for growth and movement forward in our lives. It's inevitable, it's necessary in the dynamic of healthy relationships for us to face friction, to move through it, to confront it, to embrace it, as we're saying this morning, and take on the responsibility in order to make these changes and to move forward. So as an example, I can remember when I was 16 or 17 years old, there was a tremendous amount of friction in my relationship with my parents because I was spreading my wings. I was discovering my own independence. I was learning that I had my own responsibility in life to forge my path and make my way forward and not allow my parents to make all my decisions for me. But there was this power struggle in the midst of those years where my parents recognized I was far too immature to make a lot of these choices on my own. And they still wanted to dictate things. And that frustrated me. And there's this wrestling match. There's a tremendous amount of tension and friction in the relationship around that particular issue. And my parents, from their perspective, were having to manage this tension because they knew that I needed to make these decisions and learn on my own, right? But they also knew that I was hopeless, right, when it came to making wise decisions, and I was going to make a lot of mistakes and terrible decisions that were going to lead to all sorts of pain. I remember one particular interaction with my mom when I was right around this age, and I was raised in my teenage years, late 80s, early 90s, and it was just kind of a weird scene. I was really into rap music, and there was this thing amongst rappers where they would wear this jewelry around their necks with emblems from vehicles, you know, so like a Mercedes emblem would have been a highly desirable item, and so you would have a gold chain with a Mercedes emblem, right, hanging from it, and so there was this thing that was going around for the teenagers to go out and vandalize people's cars by stealing their hood ornaments so they can wear them around their, you know, necklaces. And the more, you know, hood ornaments you had, you know, the higher your status was, at least amongst the hoodlums of 14, 15-year-old boy range. So I went out with my friend a couple of nights, you know, 2, 3 in the morning, snuck out of the house and stole some hood ornaments off of people's cars. And I collected them and hid them in a drawer. And a year or two later, my mom found these. And, you know, it was a year ago. And I was like, oh, it's no big deal. And we had this huge fight. And I remember to this day, she's just getting on me over the irresponsibility. I was like, you know, who cares? I was 14, you know, whatever. And she's like, you could have gone to juvenile detention center for this. And I didn't get it. I didn't understand the gravity of it. And then, of course, later on, when I was 17 and I had bought my own car, I had a couple of teenagers in the neighborhood get into my car, take it for a joyride, and totally, you know, wreck it. And I was so pissed off, and I probably shouldn't use that word in the sermon, so angry and frustrated, right? It was still needing my mom to make some decisions for me. And I remember learning at that point, you know, the responsibility that we have, you know, in really just governing our behavior, recognizing, oh, you can't just go and steal stuff. You can't just go and vandalize things, right? Who would have thought? And learning, you know, the tension of me having to learn how to make wise decisions. And I was hopeless. I was so immature. I was such a mess. And there was this tension between me and my parents as they knew I was just going to have to learn some lessons the hard way. And I did. And I learned those things. And friction was a good thing. It was the friction between us was a catalyst that helped me to jump the nest, and it helped them to see, hey, we don't want to contend with this teenager for years and years and years. You know, he needs to jump the nest and make those decisions on his own and learn his own responsibility in life. And, you know, it's a funny thing because friction is necessary in many situations in life, right? It's the friction that keeps my rubber soles, right, gripping to the floor so that I don't slip and fall. It's friction between your tires and the road that enable you to propel the vehicle forward and to slow down when you need to. It's friction between the brake pads and the wheels of your car that enable your car to slow down. Friction can be a very, very good thing when it's seen in the right context. And, you know, oftentimes it is something that slows something down. It grinds something to a halt so you could stop, take notice of it, right? Think about it, look at what's going on, and address particular issues. And in this case, the friction is giving Abram this opportunity to speak to Lot about his future. They can't go on like this forever. There's got to be an adjustment. And it's the friction, right? It's the uncomfort. It's the conflict, right, that is bringing them to this place of decision. And so friction is uncomfortable. It's an opportunity. And so a good question to ask yourself, and I wanted to present this to all of you this morning. In the midst of your relational conflicts right now, you know, I mean, I could speak to a number of different people in this room. You've got things going on in various areas of your life, whether it's at work or in family or close relationships or maybe just friendships or teachers or whatever else. And in the midst of those relational conflicts, what is the opportunity available to you? Right? In the midst of all of that, what opportunities are presenting themselves? What could come of this? Start to think positively about the conflict that you're experiencing and consider maybe God is using this to make some adjustments, to make some changes, to grow and to flourish on into the future. Don't see it as a negative. See it as a positive. See it as an opportunity. If you embrace the friction, it can and will lead to good things as you jump into it. So there's friction here in this relationship. And the friction, and secondly, I was noticing this, the friction forces a decision. The friction forces a decision for Abram and for Lot. You know, we make decisions every day in life. We have to move in one direction or another. And in this story, it's the friction between Abram and Lot that forces them to make a painful, you know, separation was a painful decision, but a necessary decision, and they had to part ways. And Abram, for his part, he made the choice to yield something that he did not have to yield to Lot out of his love for him and out of his devotion to this adopted son of his, you could say. And his love for Lot, he wanted the best for him. And so Abram was willing to lay down and to submit the decision to Lot in this particular situation. Lot, for his part, he had a fork in the road, right? He had to go right or go left, kind of binary decision, and he had to make the decision. And success and failure in our lives boils down to decisions that we will make. The scriptures will often present characters in stories like this, and they'll contrast them based off of a decision. And so here we have Abram and we have Lot, and they're about to go in two different ways. And we're able to assess, okay, what was the wisdom in how Abram approached this issue? What wisdom did Lot use? We're able to assess, okay, you know, whose life went in the right direction and whose went in the wrong direction and for what reasons, right? And so that's kind of the fork in the road that we're analyzing here. So, but we make decisions every day. There's a researcher recently discovered that we make around 70 decisions every day. Some of those very small decisions, you know, trite, you know, just normal decisions. Are we going to have toast for breakfast or cereal? But some of them major, right? So 70 decisions every day on average, give or take, for a particular person, which leads to 25,000 decisions every year. And in an 80-year lifespan, you're going to make well over 2 million decisions. The 20th century philosopher Albert Camus said, life is the sum of all of your choices. Right? So these decisions that we make dictate our direction in life, our course in life. And, you know, you can't say enough about the importance of making wise and informed decisions. But here's what can be deceptive about that. As I'm analyzing this story, I'm realizing that doing nothing is a decision. Abram could have sat on his hands and just allowed the problems between him and Lot and Lot's people and his people to fester by not confronting the situation and embracing the friction. Right? So he made a decision to make a decision, if that makes sense. Doing nothing, oftentimes, is a decision. That's something that I was contemplating, really thinking a lot about. You know, the importance of really jumping into the decision-making process. And so Abram's first decision is simply saying, we've got to deal with this situation. So this is what he says in verse 8. So Abram said to Lot, let's not have any quarreling between you and me, or between your herders and mine, for we are close relatives, right? That's his first decision, right? Let's not quarrel. Let's not allow this to fester. Let's not allow this to continue on. And so he jumps into the situation and deals with it head on. Right? He's unwilling to live with something that is less than ideal between him and Lot. He initiates this conversation that was necessary to rectify the situation. And this is a delicate balance. It really is, because you can be the type of person who, you know, is constantly focused on something that's less than ideal, and you could bring up all sorts of complaints, and you could just be a real irritant in people's lives, right? Or you could be the person that avoids situations and completely ignores problems and doesn't embrace the friction at all, right? And so there's a tension right here. Like, we have to recognize, okay, what is a healthy way forward? For me, I remember early on for Deborah and I, in our marriage relationship, this was a real test because we came from, we have, the one major difference in our personality is that, and especially early on in our marriage, this materialized, Deborah was very willing to confront the things that she was not wanting to put up with, okay, if I could say it delicately, right? So whenever there was a problem in the relationship, whenever there was an issue that, or something that I did that made her unhappy, she would confront that thing head on. She's like, I am not going to live with this. We are going to talk about this and we are going to deal with this. And for me, for my part, after the 10th or 11th thing that she came up with, I'm like, get off my back. Like, stop trying to change me. Stop nagging me, was the phrases that I used. But through the course of time, I realized I was taking the reverse tactic, right? I was wanting to express my own independence and essentially say, well, I don't need anything from you. You're asking all these things of me. I don't need anything from you. But the truth of the matter is, I just didn't want to confront those things and express my needs to her because of my independence. And because if I express my needs to her, then she would have a right to express her needs to me, and I would have to do something about that. And so I just kind of played this game where I was like, I'm just going to be quiet about it, right? Just going to rely upon myself here so that I don't need anybody and just live independently, right? And there's all sorts of unhealth in that. And so what we had to learn early on, especially, there was a lot of tension around this particular issue, was she had to learn to filter some of the things that were irritating her, right? To give me a kind of a fair and a balanced approach. Well, okay, let's deal with one a month kind of a thing, you know? And I had to learn to say, you know what, I'm not going to ignore the desires that I have. I need to ask her for things, right? I need to say, hey, I'm upset with this. I have an issue here. And, you know, and these things would always come up. My issues would always come up when she first brought up her issue, right? So it was my comeback. Well, you don't do this, right? So you're saying I do that? Well, you don't do, you know. So I always come back at her in the relationship. And so I had to learn to bring these things up on my own. And I needed to speak more about my needs. And she maybe needed to speak a little bit less in order for us to come into balance, right? And to deal with the tension. And so, you know, it's a really delicate balance. It's really hard. But I love the fact that Abram's first decision is he recognizes this is a problem that I cannot live with. This is a problem I cannot filter out. Right? We can go down this road for a long, long time. It can lead to all sorts of destructive things in our relationship. and because I care for Lot, I'm not going to let this go. And so Abram makes a firm decision. And so his second decision, and this is interesting because his second decision is simply this, and this comes, I think, in verse 8 or 9 here, where it says, let's part company. He says, if you go, right there at the bottom of that, let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. And if you go to the right, I'll go to the left. And at first glance, it seems like Abram's abdicating the decision-making solely to Lot. But think about this. The first decision is made. Let's part company. Right? So he acknowledges the tension between them, and then he makes it a firm decision. This is how we're going to handle this. We're going to part company. And then he gives Lot the choice to say, okay, which way do you want to go? Right? If you go right, I'm going to go left. If you go left, I'm going to go right. And he empowers Lot, right, to make the decision. And I think it's a really wise way to handle conflict, right? Because he empowers the other person while at the same time recognizing there's a decision that needs to be made here. I'm going to make it, right? But he empowers the other person and brings him into the process by saying, okay, you choose in this particular situation. This is a great tactic for parents. It's a really, really smart thing to do. And I hesitate to even share this. Fortunately, my son Josiah just left, so he does not know the secret of my tactics now. So, but in parenting, you know, it's a really a great tactic to take to really sit your kids down and simply say, okay, we're going to decide to decide, right? We've got this issue in this situation. We're going to make a decision. Right, and so a lot of times with my older kids especially, I'll sit them down and just be like, hey, your grades are slipping, so we need to make an action plan. What are you going to do about that, right? And then you empower them, right, to make the decision of how they're going to address that particular issue. You have to kind of help them govern that process, but nevertheless, you know, we're going to make a decision, right? And so here's what needs to be done. Here's what needs to be addressed. How are you going to resolve this? What choice are you going to make in this situation? You know, or, hey, you're spending too much of my money. How can you make some of the money on your own, right, to enjoy the things that you enjoy doing, right? And these kinds of things. So you sit them down, you decide to decide, right? And that's the first part of a decision. It's what I think a lot of people, they hold back on is just even making the decision in the first place. But a great tactic to take, and that was Abram's second decision in this particular situation, but we could do a whole sermon series about how to make godly and wise decisions. But here, the main point is that friction often forces decisions, and that can be a very good thing. And we need to embrace it. And we need to watch as God uses that moment in time to take us to new heights and to usher in new seasons in our lives. It can be a wonderful, wonderful thing. Embrace it. See the optimistic side of it. So how is Abram able to handle this delicate decision with wisdom, right? How is he able to sit in the midst of this tension and bring all the wisdom that he has, all the things that God has taught him and done in his life, bring this wisdom to bear on the particular situation? The third thing that I recognize here is that the grass is not always greener, right? The grass isn't always greener on the other side. And when it comes to making decisions in the midst of these tension-filled moments, you know, it's really, really important to recognize the wise course of action and not to be tempted, not to be lured away from the particular issue by something that is a distraction, by something that is less valuable than the other priorities in the particular situation. Here's what I mean. I was speaking with a friend the other day, and he was talking about a second house that they have. He was talking about getting it all ready. And I was thinking to myself, man, how nice would it be to have a second house like that? Right? Or how nice would it be to have a vacation home, right? Some place where you could just go and relax and get away. And it was this wonderful thought. Until he started talking about all the things that he had to do to prepare that house. And then later that evening, my wife and I were having dinner in the backyard, and she was talking about all the different projects and things that she was unwilling to live with on the house. And we're talking about all these things that need to be done. And we were like, oh, we're just like keeping our heads above water just to tend to the needs that this house has. How much worse would it be to have a second house to work on all those things? And even as I was thinking, oh, the grass would be greener on the other side, I was recognizing, man, it comes with all sorts of responsibilities that I clearly am not capable of handling at this moment in my life. And, you know, what I recognized here in this story is that Abram's contentment, his contentment in recognizing God's blessing in his life and the good things that it brought into his life, it enabled him to make a wise decision and to salvage a relationship. And Lot's naivety and his greed caused him to be blind heading into the relationship or heading into this decision. I was contemplating this particular passage in 1 Timothy chapter 6, where Paul writes, he says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. And those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction." And what appears to be a better situation can in the end bring us to great harm. And so we have to guard ourselves, we have to guard our hearts and our minds against thinking that the grass is always greener on the other side, right? I mean, this decision potentially could bring pain, frustration, right? If Lot's pursuit is all headed in one direction, right? If he's just thinking to himself, what is the most profitable for me, right? What is the best situation for me? And he's selfishly analyzing the decision, it can cause turmoil in relationships. And for those of us who don't know where the story is heading, tragedy unfolds for Lot. He plunges not only himself, but his entire family into a situation that brings ruin and destruction. And it's devastating, has a devastating effect upon generations of people. Just this one simple decision, just this one fool's gold moment where he looks out at the lay of the land and he says, oh, that's where I want to be, right? But he doesn't recognize the influences that will penetrate his life as a result of associating himself with a certain community of people that lead him in the absolute wrong direction. And that's the story, right? The fork in the road is these two go their separate ways, right? Abram chooses to allow Lot, right, to make his choice. Lot chooses to go to the right. Abram goes to the left, and it's friction that forces this decision, and a fork lies in the road ahead. It is our faith that oftentimes determines what we will decide, and the results of those decisions equal either success or failure down the road. There are enormous implications for the future. Now, Abraham's life story, it parallels our story. It parallels the things that we are deciding on in life. And there's so much that we can learn from him as we watch him navigate this incredible journey in life. And so, you know, as we look at these stories, as we analyze, you know, these contrasting characters, Abram and Lot, and we see that fork in the road, and we look at these things and we recognize every decision that we make can lead us down one road or another. We make 70 decisions a day, right? We make 2 million decisions in a lifetime. Our course hangs in the balance. What are we going to do? I want to just close this morning by speaking a benediction over each and every person in this room. And actually, I'll have you stand with me if you would. And as we close and as you leave, may you learn to embrace friction as an opportunity to grow and to flourish in life. And may you embrace the tension of every situation with confidence and a firm decision. May you cultivate a life of godliness and contentment so that the allure of greener pastures holds no sway upon you. And then lastly, may you call your mom on Mother's Day and tell her how beautiful and how wonderful she is. And that's not just for you, that's for me as well. I hope you enjoy today, and we'll see you next week. God bless everybody.